Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
November 7th, 2006, the Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, hot tips from the road. Welcome back. I know I missed last week, and right off the top of the show, I'm going to tell you I am so very sorry. I actually had some stuff lined up, and some of you that follow the online blog know that I was sailing in the Western Caribbean on a geek cruise, having a great time and teaching digital photography. It was actually a lot of fun, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And we did have internet on the ship. We did have internet, just not a very big pipe. So you could download email, and you could get some minor attachments uploaded. I was, you know, my little 400 pixel wide shots that I post on the blog, I could get those posted, but those big files that we use for the Digital Story Show, especially when we're working on the production with AIF files, those weren't going anywhere. So I was literally dead in the water. And so we had to skip last week's show. So I'm sorry, but we're going to make up for it this week because I have all sorts of really good stuff for you. So today's tips and tricks, they come out of life on the road and life on the water. So what I was doing, I was on what we call a geek cruise, and it's literally a conference that happens on a cruise ship, in this case a Holland America cruise ship. While we're floating out to wherever we're going, we're in a conference. I mean, all day. I mean, I started teaching at 8:30 in the morning and usually finished about 6 o'clock at night. And, of course, we had, you know, lunch break and all that sort of stuff. So while we're at sea, we would teach photography techniques. And then when we arrived in port, then we would go out and do whatever we're going to do and hopefully apply what we learned in class. And then when we came back to the ship and get ready to go somewhere else, we would have more classes and kind of build upon both our shooting and what happened in the earlier sessions. It's really kind of a cool idea, and I very much enjoyed it. It's my second one that I've been on, and I'm sure I will be on more in the future. But anyway, so while you're doing this sort of dynamic teaching and exploring these foreign destinations, and in this particular case, it was Belize and Guatemala and the Yucatan Peninsula, and Mexico. So some really cool places, different kinds of locations that sometimes demand some new photography techniques. And you have to sort of adapt, and that's kind of fun. So then I get to come back and share that stuff with you, and that's what I'm going to cover right now. Before I get into this week's tips and tricks, I thought I should talk about the photo assignment for November. Now, all the shots are in for October, and I'm working on the gallery. And if I don't have it up by the time this podcast goes up, I might, but I might not. It will be up this week, so fear not. We have some really good entries for the October photo assignment. And I think we're going to have some good ones for November, too, because the assignment for November is juxtaposition. Yes, think about that, you know, this in alignment with that, this compared to that, juxtaposition, kind of sounds like a fun assignment, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what you all can do with that. You might want to get going on that now so that the end of the month doesn't creep up on you too fast and you suddenly discover that you don't have your assignment. And remember, all you American folks, you have this little thing called Thanksgiving near the end of the month, and that will eat up some of your time as you prepare all those good fixins and then have to digest them. And it's really hard to be creative on a super, super full stomach. So I suggest that you might want to work on your assignment before the big turkey hoedown. All right, so juxtaposition, that's the assignment for November, and start thinking about it right now. I also want to touch on grab shots real quick, and boy, I've published some really nice ones lately, and we have room for a few more, so if you got one laying around, make sure you send that all in. And remember, you can always check on the specs if you go to thedigitalstory.com and click on the submissions button, and you will see everything you need to know about submitting grab shots and the photo assignment and all of that good stuff. I also have some pretty good stories for things I learned the hard way. As you recall, a podcast that I did a few weeks ago, Things I Learned the Hard Way, and I asked for some of you to send in the things that you've learned the hard way, and some of you did, and I think I'm going to kind of pull those together, and I'll probably run that show maybe next week or the week after, but it'll be a lot of fun. In the meantime, if you still have something that you haven't turned in yet, a little note about something in photography that you learned the hard way, send it on in, and maybe I can get it in that show. It's really fun to know that I'm not the only one out there learning things the hard way. Some of you have learned some terrific lessons, shall we say, less than the easy way. All right, let's start talking about some tips from the road. The first thing I want to talk about is water. Water, whether it's falling from the sky or in a big body such as an ocean, or wherever you happen to account it, water ends up being a big part of what we deal with when we're working outdoors. And of course now, you know, we're coming into, you know, we're in fall right now, we're fast approaching winter, and that means water in one form or another for a lot of us. Sometimes it might be frozen, sometimes not. So while I was on the trip, I would just want to comment really quickly that the underwater housing that I was using for my little Canon digital ELF, the SD700IS, it was good not only for the underwater stuff that I did in Belize, but when I went splashing around in the surf zone or when it was raining outside or whatever, the waterproof housing just allowed me to go take pictures wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted. And I noticed that not very many other people had one. In fact, I don't recall anyone, you know, having a formal housing at all other than myself. A couple of people had cameras that were splash proof or waterproof to, you know, 5 to 10 feet. But I was the only one with a little housing. And I have to tell you, that allowed me to go out and get shots that other people just couldn't get. And it was a lot of fun. So I just, even though we had a show on underwater photography, I just wanted to remark again that I'm really digging the underwater housings that you can get for these cameras. They don't cost a whole lot. I mean, they're like $120 to $150, depending on which camera you have. But they're really useful. And I think coming into the off season here, you know, packing a camera up in that and heading out sounds like that you can capture stuff that maybe you normally wouldn't dare to do. Now, one thing I want to remark about that is that leave the camera in the housing after you come back in the house and let it warm up all together in the housing so that the condensation forms on the outside of the housing and not on your camera. And that's just a little quick tip. That's true when you protect your camera with Ziploc bags and stuff like that, too. Let it warm up before you take it out. Now, we encountered some rain on the trip, and one of the tips that I gave people who didn't have underwater housing or weren't prepared for rain, and this is a pretty good tip, I don't think I've ever talked about it on the show, but if you go into the bathroom at the hotel, almost every time you'll find something in there called a shower cap, and it's something that you rarely use for showering, primarily because it just looks so terrible when you put it on. I mean, have you ever really seen anyone wear a shower cap? It's not a pretty sight. I guess it's a, you know, this is a private kind of moment sort of thing. But anyway, most of us don't actually wear the shower cap, but we have it in there, so it's just going to waste. You know, all these shower caps out there, well, we could be putting them to good use. And the use that I like to put them to is for shooting in wet conditions because they're perfect for it. They have, you know, this plastic working area with an elastic band, you know, and that's the part you're supposed to slip over your head. But if you poke a hole in the middle of the plastic, you can stick your lens barrel through it, or, you know, wrap it around your lens barrel. And then you have this bag to stick your hands into that you can work all the controls. And the elastic kind of keeps it against your wrist so not a whole lot of water comes in. It's really a handy way to work in wet conditions, especially light rain and snow. Your camera stays protected. You're able to shoot shots. And then when you're done with it, you're done with it. And no big deal. You can either keep it or toss it. So as you go to hotels or have friends who travel, ask them to snag a few shower caps for you. They don't take up any room at all in your camera bag, and they're really a great way to keep your camera dry while you're working in wet conditions. And they cost how much? Nothing. They're free. That's even better. The next thing I want to talk about is when you're on the road, the excursion package versus some other way of getting to a locale in order to take pictures. And my shooting buddy, Ben Long, and I have been having this ongoing conversation about excursions versus other transportation such as taxi cabs for quite a while now. And of course, we ran right up into this again, head first into this again on this recent trip. Ben was my teaching partner for the digital photography track on the Geek Cruise. And we went out shooting together also a couple days, and you know, we had a chance to test all of our theories. So the first day that we were in port, we went to Belize, and which is somewhere I've wanted to go to for a long time because I've heard of the fantastic diving there. Ben doesn't really like diving that much, so we split up that day, and I took a catamaran excursion out to the reef and went diving, and then drank cheap rum and Mai Tai mix drinks, fruit drinks, and hung around on a white sand beach for a while, and then took the catamaran back, and we had a great time. It was a lot of fun. I got good shots when I was diving. I got good shots splashing around at the beach. I used my waterproof housing, and it was just great stuff. Ben, not liking to dive very much, he decided to take an excursion that was supposed to take him, you know, over the meadow and through the woods and, you know, through the jungle and across the water and all that good stuff. It's supposed to involve a hike through the jungle where he was hoping to get some good shots and some ruins and all sorts of goodies. So I caught up to him the night after we got back, and I was feeling really good about my day shoot, and I had a lot of good images to show for it. And I asked Ben about his excursion, and he goes, "Oh man, another wasted day." And this is where a lot of times we come out on these commercial excursions that are tied to cruise ships or, you know, other vacation activities, as we say. And the reason we're kind of down on them as photographers is because we don't really get to be photographers on excursions. What they really like to do is put you in some sort of vehicle, and then they like to drive you a long ways, or put you in a boat and float you a long ways. Meanwhile, they're talking to you the whole time. Some of it may be useful. Often a lot of it isn't. It's comedy at best. And then when you finally do get somewhere where you get to get out of the vehicle, you only get to be there for a few minutes. You don't really get to work the shot. You don't really get to nose around. You don't really often get to even explore on your own, and then you have to get back on the vehicle and you're off to the next place. And you do this over the course of the day, and finally you get back to the cruise ship or to your hotel, wherever you happen to be staying, and you basically have just spent three quarters of the day driving around or floating around somewhere, a few minutes taking pictures, usually from a perspective you didn't really want, and that's about it. And that really isn't the way I think photographers should explore when they're in exotic locations, no matter where they are, whether you're in Europe or whether you're in Mexico or visiting Canada or Northern Europe, no matter where you are, it just doesn't seem like a great idea. So what do you do instead? Well, This is an area where I don't really feel comfortable giving advice, but I'm going to tell you what I do and then sort of let you modify it to your own comfort level. What I do, and Ben does this with me a lot of times, is that we sort of figure out where we want to go and, you know, what highlights we want to see and figure out about how much time we have to see them. Then we hire a cab. And this isn't always the easiest thing in a foreign country, because the first thing you need to look for is to make sure that you get a real cab, you know, with a licensed driver, and, you know, usually the cab being marked by, you know, whatever the local cab company is. So you want to get a real cab. You don't want to get, if you can help it, someone that's freelancing, just mainly because, you know, you're driving with a qualified cab driver. I think odds are there's more accountability there and less likelihood of something strange happening on the road. The next challenge then is to find someone who speaks at least a little bit of English, or speaks a language that you speak well, if you're not an English speaker or if you speak other languages. But the communication thing is really important. Now, in Mexico, I can get by with my Spanish. It's not very good Spanish, and it requires a lot of tolerance on the listener's behalf. But it is good enough to sort of, you know, let the person know where I want to go, when I want to stop, and have some little chit-chat in between. And then I like the cab driver to also be able to speak some English, because I only have two languages. I only have English and some Spanish, and that's pretty much it. So those are, you know, that's where all my cards have to go. So I do like the cab driver to speak a little bit of English, and I figure between my Spanish and his English, we can get by. And quite often that's the case. But communication is really important. Otherwise, you just sort of end up in places that maybe you don't really want to go, or there's misunderstandings and all that kind of stuff, and it's not very fun. Now, one cab driver that we ran into, he had a pretty good idea. This was when we wanted to see the ruins and on the Yucatan Peninsula. He had a book that he had made that had pictures of all the different sites that he knew how to get to. And then, you know, we could just point and say, yeah, we want to go here. We like this. Can we do this one and this one? And how long will we need to be gone? And, you know, how much it'll cost? And it was really a cool idea. So if you're a cab driver listening to this, or you know somebody that is, I just want to say that I really like the idea of having some kind of book with photographs in it that people can point to, because pictures are the universal language. Pictures transcend all of our different language barriers and really make it a lot easier for us to communicate where we want to go. So I thought that was a really cool idea. And we ended up hiring this guy who spoke a little bit of English. He seemed to be able to tolerate my Spanish, and he had a book of pictures that we could point to. The other thing that you want to establish up front is how much is it going to cost? And this is pretty important stuff. Generally speaking, in Mexico and Guatemala, Belize, places like that, I've been paying between $40 and $80 for anywhere between a half a day and three quarters of a day, just to have the cab driver, you know, stay with us, to sort of be our guide. And that's per person, so if you got three people in the car, you know, everybody ponies up. Now, I have seen some American tourists in particular really try to, you know, negotiate and get the lowest price possible. And I think a little bit of negotiating is fine. On the other hand, you know, I just also think that, you know, these guys are trying to make a living. They have families. You know, they're not making a ton of money. You know, figure if they get my $60 and maybe two other people $60 a day, you know, that's $180. They have, you know, to take care of their car, they have to pay for the gas, and, you know, they're doing okay, but, you know, they're not exactly, you know, robbing us here. So, I do try to negotiate a fair price, but I'm not necessarily concerned with, you know, getting them down to rock bottom. And the other thing is too, you know, quite honestly, I want the guy happy while he's driving me around. I don't want him, you know, frustrated and just, oh man, you know, I'm working for a lot less today than I really want to. that doesn't seem like a good idea when you're putting your life in someone else's hands. So I think, negotiate a fair price. Try to have everyone feel pretty good about what you're doing, and then you're starting out on the right foot for your adventure. Now, I've had a lot of people tell me they're just not comfortable with this, and I'd have to say I totally understand. I don't think it's for everyone. I'm actually more comfortable when there's three of us in a cab, three guys or a combination of men and women in a cab. But and it's something that I actually do interview. If there's cabbies pooled up there, I do interview them carefully and really try to make the best choice possible. That being said, I've had really good luck using cab drivers to help me get to places that I want to go, and I don't have to take an excursion. Because with a cab driver, I can tell him, please stop whenever I see something I want. I can work it as long as I want. I get back in the car, and then we go to the next place that I want to go, and I can stay there as long as I want, and then come back when I'm ready to. And, of course, you're always managing your time on these things. We never have enough time. I never get to spend as long at a site as I would like, especially when I'm on a cruise ship, because I usually only get a day or three quarters of a day in port. So you have to be very efficient, and you have to target things that are within an hour and a half's worth of a drive, so that you're not spending all day on the road and not shooting. But that being said, I tell you, going the cab route is a really good way to go if you can negotiate a good price and find a cab driver that you feel comfortable with, that you're confident will do a good job for you. You have a lot more flexibility, and it won't cost you really any more than if you take an excursion where you're just all piled into a bus and you have absolutely no say about what happens. And chances are you won't get very many good pictures. Just something to think about when you're planning your next outing somewhere away from home. Now, the next thing I want to talk about today is backing up your pictures on the road. And I have a pretty good story for you. So I use Aperture and Lightroom and iPhoto for my photo management, depending on what the assignment is. And I was shooting a lot of RAW on this particular trip. And the way that I was shooting, I wanted to manage everything in Aperture. And my Aperture library is so big that I actually have it on an external FireWire hard drive that I plug into my computer. So all the data is on the hard drive, and then the applications live on the computer itself. So my workflow is, though, after I load all my images off the memory card into the application, which is writing them to this external FireWire drive, I back them up again on an iPod of all things. And what I do is I use a 30 gig iPod that I carry with me. It's the fifth generation iPod. It's the one that can play video. It's a very nice iPod, and you have all these different models now, and you can get I think up to 80 gigs with the most current version of the iPod. That's a lot of storage. So I plug the iPod in, and when you set your preferences, you can set it so that it shows up as a hard drive right on your laptop's Finder screen there, right on the desktop. So I do that, and then after I've loaded all the images into my photo management application, then I just load them in folders onto the iPod so that I have everything that I shot, even though it's not organized in an application, I still have all the original files. Now, the goal is to have all of your work live in at least two places at any given time. So that means I don't erase my memory cards until I've uploaded the images into the photo management application, which goes on the FireWire hard drive, and then copying them again just in folders onto my iPod that I can carry around. Once they're on those two separate hard drives, then I feel confident enough that I can erase the memory cards, charge my batteries, and get ready for another day's worth of shooting. So I got to put this to the test on this trip. I had stayed up all night one night organizing, rating my photos, adding metadata, making a slideshow. This was later in the trip because I was going to make a presentation on my last day of teaching. So while I was teaching and doing my thing, it was time to do the presentation and I plug the FireWire drive into my computer and it won't mount. It doesn't mount. The computer can't see it. And the drive is spinning. No drive. No mounting. No nothing. Try everything I know. Even had a couple of computer experts in the room. They couldn't get it going. And everyone's going, oh my gosh, did you have all your pictures on there? And I go, yes. I mean, I have not only, you know, this week's shoot, but I have, you know, basically all my other shoots on there too. And they go, well, you don't seem very worried. And I go, well, I'm a little worried because I spent all last night photo editing them, rating them, adding some metadata, making a slideshow for you. So I do have a whole night's work on there that I'm not going to be able to recover. But the reason why I'm not freaking out too much is because I have every picture I took on my iPod and back in the room, safe and sound. So I'm not going to lose any pictures, but I am just going to lose a little bit of labor around those pictures. And therefore, you know, I wasn't sweating too much. Although I was thinking at the time, darn, should have gone drinking that night and not bothered staying in my room doing all that hard work. But at any rate, I wasn't too freaked out. As it turned out, later on that night after the class, I went back to my room and I remembered that I had had the drive plugged into my other computer. I actually travel with two computers when I'm teaching, just like I travel with two cameras, and that the computer had actually crashed. And I was thinking, man, I wonder if it crashed, which is, this computer never crashes. I mean, I can't even tell you the last time it crashed, but it did. I go, I wonder if it crashed while it was writing something to the drive, which might have freaked out one of the sectors or corrupted the directory a little bit. Because when I was trying to plug it in to the other computer while I was teaching, the other computer in the drive just really had no idea what was going on, and that's why it couldn't mount. But I said, what if I plug it back in to the computer that was plugged in when it crashed? I wonder if they could kind of sort things out. And sure enough, they were able to. So I was, you know, there were a few hours there where I thought I had lost everything. And as it turned out, I didn't lose that night's worth of work. But it was a good reminder for me about being vigilant about my backup stuff. And that's really the point here, is that I lucked out this time and I was able to recover my drive. Next time, I might not be able to. So make sure that when you're traveling, even if only a day trip or a two-day trip, make sure that you have your backup strategy in place as you upload things. And your backup strategy may be upload to your computer and leave the images on the flashcards until you're able to back up your computer. That's not a bad way to go. It does require you carrying more flashcards than you'd have to normally, but not a bad way to go. My friend Ben Long, he uses a digital wallet designed by SmartDisk, I think the one he has. And he can actually use a little card reader in the field and upload his images onto this little hard drive. I think it's a 20 or 40 gigabyte hard drive in the field. It saves all the pictures. He can see the file names. He can't see the pictures themselves, but he can see all the file names to make sure he knows everything is fine. And then he can erase the card and keep shooting. So that's not too bad a way to go either. Although, personally, I would like to keep it on the card and backed up on the digital wallet until I've also uploaded the cards onto the computer, but that's just me. My point being is that make sure you back up your stuff on the road. Don't wait until you get home because bad things can happen, and actually sometimes they seem to happen more often when you're traveling than when you're at home in your own computer. In your own computer? How about working with your own computer? That kind of sounds a little bit better. All right, well, that's it for this week. I'm really glad to be back. And again, I apologize for last week, but I hope you enjoyed this show. I've got lots of stuff in the can, so we're going to have a lot of fun over the coming months. Remember, the photo assignment is juxtaposition for November. Go out there and take some great shots, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, web blogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.